Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
This mess!
Good morning and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio. They say a week is a long time in politics. Well, it doesn't really feel like that, does it? Let's have a quick recap, shall we? Apparently, last week's setting up of the independent group of MPs has been touted as a game-changing development in British politics. Well, I can't see it. Theresa May has postponed yet another meaningful vote until the second week of March, even as some members of her party are still manoeuvring to stay in Europe. Jeremy Corbyn is still being accused of not doing enough to curb the anti-Semitism in Gulf the Labour Party, and it's still not happening despite Deputy Leader Tom Watson's warnings. And the European Union are threatening to postpone Brexit for 2 years while some kind of a deal can be hammered out and a cliff edge can be avoided. Well, here's my news for all these vacillators, all these remainers, and all these obscurantist lawyers, okay? Leaving your political party is not leaving Europe. Postponing Brexit is not leaving Europe. Abusing people because they're Jewish is not leaving Europe. And avoiding so-called cliff edges is not leaving Europe either. There is only one thing that is leaving Europe, and that is actually leaving Europe on March the 29th. 0344 499 1000. Everything else is just absolute and utter balderdash. Coming up, we'll be finding out what's happening with the jihadi bride, what's new and exciting in Hollywood this morning, where I have just returned from, and why having a grumpy cat might actually be your fault. You are exactly what your pet is, it would seem. 0344 499 1000. You'll listen to me, Mike Graham, home from California on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, I have to say, as much as I love doing this radio show, I have had the most amazing week of holiday that I've had for many a year. I've been to Europe several times. I've been to Spain. I've been to Greece. I've been to France. I've been to Germany. I have been all over the place, Turkey even as well. But I have to say, going to California was a real eye-opener on what is going on in the rest of the world. Because let me tell you this, America is a giant country. You're all sitting here watching the Oscars and going how wonderful it all is and or how terrible it all is, all terribly glamorous. But let me say this to you. If you drive around in a gas-guzzling car like I did over in California, you get a pretty good idea of what they care about in America, and it is not saving the planet. They do not care about anything other than making money, producing huge amounts of energy because that's what they need to keep their country going. They don't care about Donald Trump. Not one person mentioned Donald Trump to me in a whole week that I was in California. And California, don't forget, is a blue state that would have liked him not to become president and not to occupy the White House. Didn't even hear much about the wall on the border with Mexico. And I certainly didn't hear anything about Brexit. When I came back, all I've been told about from all of the people that I've met so far is that, you know, there's been some serious game changing going on in British politics. You know, both political parties have changed without recognition. You won't recognise them in a few weeks' time because they'll have changed dramatically into this thing called independent MPs. Well, I'm sorry, but the so-called independent MPs to me are just a bunch of spoiled brat MPs, it seems to me. In fact, I might change their name from Tigs to SPGs because they are just literally spoiled brats. They want to stay in Europe. They don't like what's going on in their mainstream parties. I think it's a good thing that they've left, and I think they should have by-elections. Simple as that. I want to hear from all of you this morning, though, because I want you to tell me what I've missed, what needs to be changing, what should be changing. 0344 499 1000. I want to talk now, though, to a man who is very much revered in these. I knew he said reviled, revered in these times. George Pascoe Watson, former political editor of The Sun, now with Portly Communications. George, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Sorry, almost a Freudian slip there, George. But let me tell you this: coming as you've spent a lot of time in America, you know, going to a place like California, which is so massive. I mean, it would be, I think, the fifth largest economy in the world if it was a country. The amount of energy they use, the amount of trucks driving around, the amount of sort of, you know, machinery that you see out there is incredible. And you realise that we are a very small island, rather insignificant on the world stage. And quite frankly, you know, whether we leave Europe or not, does not matter a jot to the White House.
To the people around the world, they very much our historic position still remains a big thing. The royal family still remains a big thing. There's a lot of fame and legacy. But it is also true that it's quite hard in this day and age for Britain to remain a critical nation. And that's why soft power is so important to the United Kingdom. And soft power is delivered in all sorts of ways. Even, and I'm not kidding, the award of an Oscar overnight to Olivia Colman puts Britain on the stage. It's not the only thing. Obviously, our position on the United Nations Security Council, our defence, our ability to be one of the few nuclear powers in the world, all of these things actually continue to matter.
They do continue to matter, but what I'm saying is that all of those things will continue to matter regardless of whether we are in or out of the European Union. That was kind of my point. I'm not saying that we are, as a nation, no longer important, but whether we are in or out of the European Union matters nothing.
What matters will be Britain's ability to continue to trade, and I'm pretty sure that will continue to grow. I think that there's been an awful sense that people have had of, and rightly in some cases, people have not been spending money, businesses have not been investing in the UK whilst they wait.
I've just spent an absolute fortune in California, George, I've got to tell you.
I'm glad to hear that's good for foreign direct exchange. But I think what will happen, as soon as we know what's actually going to happen, perhaps in the beginning of April, we will see a big splurge of money in this country. This country is not going to go anywhere. It's not going to go down the tubes. We have a fantastic, you know, universal language. We are in a brilliant dateline, right, well placed in the middle of the world. We have fantastic engineers. We have fantastic universities. This is a great place to live. And don't forget, we have the rule of law, which is something we always take for granted and is a fundamental reason why businesses and oligarchs and all the rest of it use London as their home for legal and justice. And these things really matter. They're not going to go anywhere. And I think what will happen is that we will become a stronger country, not weaker.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And what I find interesting, though, is when I do come back, and they say a week is a long time in politics. It's one of those, you know, hardy annual phrases that people use. But, you know, when you're away, it seems like you're away for ages. When you're watching somebody else who's away, nothing much has really changed. And all this nonsense about, you know, the sort of political landscape suddenly taking a dip and everything changing because several MPs have decided to become independent and form themselves into this independent group of MPs seems to me to be rather petulant. Doesn't appear to make much of a difference at the moment. What do you make of it?
I hear what you say. I think it's a little bit more than that. It's a slow burner. I don't think anybody genuinely expected this to be a political earthquake in one moment. I mean, the independent group of MPs have not even yet got themselves together to have a leader, and perhaps that's kind of fashionable right now because we haven't got a Conservative leader or a Labour leader who are particularly doing their jobs properly. So,
well, maybe nobody wants it, George.
Well, there is a definite sense of that. That's not a maybe. That's a definite. There are a lot of people who would like the job, but not under these terms and conditions and not at this time. So I can understand why that is. But at the same time, there is a terrible sense of you first, and nobody really wants to stand up who's got a really attractive vision and a believable and credible story about where they want to take this country. And that reflects, I'm afraid, the social media driven society in which we are. People are so terrified of being unpopular that they're not prepared to stand up and say, this is the way forward. You know, leaders don't need to be loved, they need to be respected. And that's what we're looking for here.
Absolutely right. And what about this final hour that we keep hearing about as well? Because it struck me this morning, George, as I was sort of preparing to come back to work and feeling full of the joys of spring. I keep hearing, well, of course, you know, in fact, I heard James Cleverly saying it last night on another radio station, talking about, well, everybody knows the EU only negotiates when we get down to the final hour. Well, when exactly does the final hour begin? And I know that, you know, I do know how many minutes there are in an hour and all that. I don't want you to say 60 minutes before March the 29th. But, you know, when does the final hour actually kick in? When are we in, you know, the home straight?
That's a really good question. It's about now, and I think you will find people who are out there have been telling me in just in the last hour, Mike, that the EU are beginning slowly to try and find ways of getting into a new situation where there is a deal. Now, why do they care? They care because a no deal is actually very bad for the European Union and many of its countries, as well as it is for the UK. And so I think that people are, even now, even as you and I are speaking, are beginning to crystallize around a change in the mood and the weather. And I think we will end up in a situation where we will still leave the European Union, perhaps at the end of March, but formally as we get our own laws through a couple of months later than that. But I think we will do it. And I think it's because in the end, political gravity requires everybody to move.
It does. And what about this latest development this morning? And we already know about the Tory kind of reticence on, in some quarters to avoid a no deal. We also know about those who would wish to get a no deal. Where are we, one, with the Tory party and their kind of amendments, which may or may not be made come Wednesday? And now a new sort of suggestion from the European Union itself that we might need to wait maybe 21, 24 months, actually, for a delayed Brexit.
All of these things are part of negotiations, Mike. What you hear is a couple of days or a day after they've been first floated as a negotiating position. Some in the EU have suggested that the best way of getting rid of this Northern Ireland backstop is actually not to have it in the first place, yeah, which would require us to have a longer transition period. And that's when we would actually leave the EU. I don't think that's really likely to happen. It's more of a starting position in a conversation. Tories, of course, who want a no deal. There are not any Tories who actually want a no deal, not really. What they want is
There's
no
deal.
There's
a few. I've met them.
Well, they don't really want that. What they want is no deal to stay on the table to keep the EU interested in negotiations. Yeah. It is true there are some scorched earth Conservatives and others who believe that actually the best thing we can do for this economy is just to rip ourselves away from the European Union, deal with the pain that will inevitably cause. Lots of people would be thrown out of jobs. There's no question about that.
Well, there is a question about it, George. Here's the thing. The reason why people say, why don't we just go with no deal, is because we keep having these constant interruptions from lawyers. Now, I've had plenty of dealings with lawyers in my life, and I'm sure you have as well. The one thing they're very good at is obstacles. The one thing they're very, very good at is finding another obstacle in front of you when you've got rid of the first obstacle. And that's their job, basically. They are obscurantists. They are people who want to complicate matters when they could be simple. And as long as we've got the idea that we can't have a no deal, we'll be doing this forever.
It is absolutely true what you say about lawyers, but it is also absolutely true that there are some people whose jobs and livelihoods would be thrown out
How is it, though? How do you know that? Well, nobody knows that, surely.
Well, I'll give you one example. I'll give you an example of a Welsh hill farmer who would never make a profit under any circumstances because it's not a profitable business, and it would go out of business were it not for European Union subsidies. And right now, the European Union subsidies would die.
Is that the best you've got? You're going to put a few Welsh hill farmers out of work?
Well, it's one example, and you may not have Welsh hill farmers listening, Mike, but you certainly have a few less now.
I'm not one of those that encourages people not to listen to something they don't like. I encourage people to listen to things because they will be informed. I'm not into echo chambers, and if you're a Welsh hill farmer listening now, you may want to listen to George Pascoe Watson's advice and get yourself another job.
Well, the truth is, that is one example. There are lots and lots of examples of areas where, you know, I can give you another one straight away, the European Medical Agency, where they license drugs in this country. This is an area I know very familiar with because I work in, some of my clients are in this industry. Their work is actually moving to Amsterdam right now.
They've already got them.
The transition is on.
They closed up the shop and started folding up the flags. But in the end, George, you know, all of these subsidies that we get from the European Union are as a result of the money we give them. So there's nothing to stop us, for example, if we wish to, subsidising our own Welsh farmers, is there?
Well, there's nothing to stop us doing that. That's absolutely right. But then you have to get into a secondary question, which is one I know that in your days on newspapers and mine too, a really critical question for readers of newspapers who like The Sun is the cost of food. Mm. And a lot of people would make the argument that if we left the European Union with no deal, we would be able to import much, much cheaper food from all sorts of markets around the world. And that is true.
Yeah.
But The downside maybe is that you'd have to import food which hasn't got the same health status as the food that we currently
have. Yeah, this is the old chlorinated chicken. I've just been in America, right? There's nothing wrong with the chicken in America. I had a great time eating the chicken in America. In fact, one night I had some really good chicken wings, hot chicken wings with a blue cheese sauce, the like of which you can't get here. And the sooner we import that...
And you can... No, I agree with you, but... The downside of all this is that's not the point I was going to make. The downside of all this is that you import cheaper food, again, at the cost of British farmers who can't sustain lower prices because it's just not as cheap to produce.
Sure, but with the greatest of respect, George.
And you say sure, but it's a really, really important thing.
But listen, all of the things that you have said, George, are not in any way, anywhere near a certainty. None of it is a certainty, and that is the point. And as soon as we try to make it a certainty, the lawyers get involved, they start putting caveats in front of everybody, everybody starts worrying, and nothing happens. And that's where we are. And that's why I say there are many more people now who would like a no deal, whether they're in politics or not. It may be the wrong way to put it, but there's lots of people who listen to this show and who are out there in the streets and ordinary people of this country who just want to get out and they'll take their chances.
They will. That's absolutely right. But I'm telling you, as somebody who is a Brexiteer, you know, who worked for many years on the Sun leading these arguments, now in business for 10 years, and I see at first hand, these are not guesses, these are not suppositions, these are genuine concerns for people who
Listen, I get that.
It's not. I don't mean a concern because it might or might not happen. It is an absolute stick-on in some areas that these things will happen and people will have to change. My view is we need to manage the change. It's the right thing to do. It's a healthy thing to do. But I think we kid ourselves if we think there'll be riches and glory at the end of this straight away if there's no deal. I think it will cause definite pain to definite industries.
I'm sure that many people...
And we need to be clear about that.
No, I don't think anybody would disagree with that, George. I don't think there's many people out there who are calling for, you know, the great citadel on the hill to suddenly be unleashed upon us all as soon as we can get rid of the yoke of the European Union. I don't think anybody believes that we will suddenly all be better off and that we'll all be going on great foreign holidays and we'll all be counting our money in thousands rather than in hundreds. I don't think anyone believes that, but I do think that this ongoing paralysis of politics is bad for the country, is bad for the government, is bad for everybody in business in this country, and there is nothing but a downside to more and more delays.
There's definitely a problem on delay, and I would agree with you there, because it doesn't really change the parameters. Every business that I know has already built in contingency. It is already braced for no deal. They've taken the worst possible option, and they planned for that. And I think that's where they should be, and they should be ready to leave the EU with no deal and also. And I think that that's the best thing to do. To delay things, of course, is the Prime Minister's attempt at trying to stay on the ice as long as it can before it cracks beneath her. I can understand why she's doing it, and in many ways, it's the sane thing to do. She's also trying to keep her political party together and stay in power, because the alternative, and let me tell you this for absolute certainty, that the prospect of a Jeremy Corbyn government fills my clients with a lot more fear than the prospect of a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah, well, it even fills some Labour Party members with fear as well. So I don't think that's going to happen. George, you worry too much, man. You should come and have lunch with me. I will show you the true way to enjoy yourself in the future, Brexit-free and indeed free of the European Union. Great to talk to you. George Pascoe-Watson from Portland Communications there, telling us why he thinks a no-deal would be disastrous. I don't believe him. I'm sorry. I do not go along with this doom and gloom scenario. I've said it many times before. You know, let's just get on with it, please. Can we? Because the more it gets delayed, the more the Remainers get hold of the reins of power, the more that they will not let go of them. I say it's time to throw them off the horse, to be honest. 0344 499 1000 is the number. I want to hear from loads of you because I want to get your perspective on what happened last week, what's happening at the moment as well. Of course, Theresa May out in Sharm el-Sheikh meeting with Angela Merkel and various other leaders in the Middle East.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Don't wish too hard because they make them true and you can't. You're listening to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio in association with The Times. Politics tamed, you might say, and quite right too. We're here, of course, until 1 o'clock when Matthew Wright and Kevin O'Sullivan will be along as well. Let me read you a couple of quick tweets. Ian says this, agreed on Brexit. This is nothing about delay to get a deal. It's all about how they can stop it altogether. There are no leavers asking for a delay, only remainers wanting a delay to push for remain. I think that's very true. And Danny says it's quite obvious that Shamima Begum is being coached by her lawyer. What to say now? It's a real change of tune to what she was saying over the last few weeks where she refused to denounce ISIS. And one from Luke who says, I'm tweeting you from my Huawei phone. No Chinese espionage happening yet in sunny South Wales. And to be honest, I don't care. Bring on 5G. Well, let's go to the phones because lots of you want to talk and I want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Ryan is in the New Forest. Hello, Ryan.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well, sir. What would you like to say?
I'd like to say sorry if my phone has bad reception because I am actually in Dorset.
Dorset's a horrendous place to try and get any reception, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I actually live in Hampshire. I'm just travelling down it, but it's bad where I am. Near Southampton.
I mean, they call it the Jurassic Coast, they think, because it looks a bit dinosaur-like. I think it's because of the communications.
Yeah, I think so. I was basically calling because I thought of a point this morning after your first guest you had on. Couple of things. One thing, obviously, no one seems to point out if I have something, you know, if I'm at work and I'm my business or whatever, if I'm dependent on something wholly, that there's a reason. If that was to go, the thing I was dependent on, I was so reliant on it that basically it was to all of a sudden go. I'd try and work out so I could have something in place. So therefore, if it did all fall down, that I wasn't going to go down, you know? So
well, exactly.
I don't understand why a country can't adopt that sort of mentality.
Well, I think the country can. The trouble is, Ryan, right, whenever you hear people like George Pascoe Watson, who's a guy I've known for many years, when he starts talking about, you know, well, of course, we all know for certain that these things are going to happen. And then you say, well, exactly what do we know for certain? It turns out we don't know anything for certain.
Well, I mean, that's it. It's everyone's speculating and it's hypotheticals and, you know, to put them down as concrete and to use them as an arguing point, I think is rather stupid. But I got to thinking this morning straight after that, because a lot of people, obviously, if you voted Remain because you're, like, really anti-racist and the movement of people and blah, 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 that's fine. You probably are quite progressive. And also, if you did vote out because, you know, you wanted to really shut yourself off from the world, you're a bit racist and things like that, then you are obviously regressive, you know.
But so you're saying Remainers are actually less progressive?
Well, no, I'm saying that I think there's a certain side of them that will, because any of them that did remain just to be at the forefront of world economics and to feel that we should have our place still because we are this great nation economically and trading.
Yeah.
Is that not like slightly an institutional hark back to the old days of the British Empire that you can't give up?
Listen, I've often accused Remainers of having Stockholm Syndrome, basically saying that one of the reasons they can't leave the European Union is because it's too difficult. Well, that's not a reason not to leave, is it?
Well, no, exactly. I mean, you're paid to do a job, and when you've got to actually get down and do that job, if you can't do it, you do look rather stupid. And all these people. Thanks as well for pointing out that a lot of people last week when you were away were trying to get away with saying this is one of the biggest historical weeks of political history.
Yeah.
We're trying to actually lump a good bit of, gump underneath their argument.
Hyperbole,
really,
yeah.
They are just being spoiled, you know, so it's
It's as you were, Ryan. Listen, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Even though you were in darkest Dorset, Ryan there managed to get a signal. But it is ridiculous, isn't it, where you can't actually get a signal to make a phone call on your mobile in all sorts of parts of this country, when in most parts of the world now, even those parts which you might regard as slightly less developed than ours, it's absolutely fine. I got a better mobile phone line in Turkey in the middle of the desert than I did down in Dorset, for heaven's sake. Let's go to Susan, who's in Exeter. Hello, Susan.
Good morning, Michael. I'm so pleased that you're back. The other gentleman was very, very nice, but he hasn't got the panache. And we need you to keep us
well,
going.
You know,
we just need you.
Very few people have got my panache, Susan, it has to be said.
Well, yeah, but don't get too big-headed, because you can go off people, you know.
I'm not big-headed at all. I'm simply stating the facts, Susan.
I'm teasing. With these issues, there are several issues here.
Yes.
With Shamina, this young lady, she said she wants to come back with her baby and lead a quiet life.
Yeah.
And she wants to now do the opposite to what she's been doing, de-radicalise young ladies for going out there and doing what she did. Right. Here's what I think we should do. Soon, if she will come back because the lawyers will get her
back.
Well,
I certainly hope not. I hope you're wrong,
Susan. She will. She will, because they can't do anything. She's as British as you or me.
I doubt that very much.
She's got the passport.
No, she's been stripped of her citizenship, Susan. She's not British anymore.
No, they can't do it. They can't do it.
Well, they've done it. You said all this before. Listen, you said all this. You were one of those doubters who said all this before I went away. Okay. Oh, no, she can't have that happen. Well, it's happened, and it did happen.
Well, did you know that? Well, of course, you know the law gets overturned.
When?
They can overturn it.
Who can?
Anybody. The powers that be.
Well, they may do. But there are no grounds for overturning it at the moment.
Now, if that happens, if she comes back, right, as soon as she hits the airport, you put an electronic tag on her, right? She's under surveillance by the police for 24 hours.
Uh-huh.
Right?
I don't think that's long enough. About 24 years.
It's long enough. No, hang on. Well, it could go up permanently, 24 hours permanently.
All right.
And the minute she starts being naughty, she gets involved with underground activities, with radicalisation, etc.
Goes on the underground.
Bang her up.
Well, it's a bit woolly, that, Susan. I mean, you can't just say...
No,
but you can't just bang her up just because she goes on the underground or because she does something you don't like.
No, there is, because she's getting involved with the stuff she's been involved with before, which includes massacring.
Yeah, but these people are very. Yeah, but hang on, Susan. These people are very clever. She'll say, "Oh well, of course, I went to meet with this radical group in order to tell them not to be radical." That's what she'll say.
Well, they'll have to put bugs in the rooms, won't they?
Well, you're not allowed to do that.
Why?
See,
not?
Your plan is full of flaws, Susan.
Why aren't they allowed to do it?
Because you cannot obtain surveillance on people without first getting a court order. And therefore, in order to get a court order, you have to prove why you want the court order. And it's very difficult to prove that you need to put people under surveillance.
No, you don't do all that. You just go in as a cleaner or
cleaner?
As a repairman and you put a bug
a repairman.
On the table and listen.
Oh, right, OK. Well, just get the Chinese to do it. They seem to be experts at this.
The Chinese, you're talking about not allowing them to do the phones, access to the phones. They've been granted permission to build a nuclear power joint.
Oh, it's a bit worrying, isn't it?
It's very worrying.
You seem to have become racked with doubt since I've been away, Susan. I want you to get back on track, right? And be more optimistic.
Well, there's nothing much to be optimistic about, is there?
Of course there is.
No.
Spring is in the air, for one. Right.
Well, it doesn't deny that things are still going on that we don't like. Things are always going on that we don't like.
Well, that's what I'm here for, Susan. I'm back to sort it all out, OK?
Yeah, thanks for coming back anyway.
Yeah, cheers, Susan. You're very, very welcome. It's lovely, isn't it, to get such a marvellous welcome back from Susan, who doesn't seem too sure whether she's glad to have me back or not.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I'll tell you why. There are a lot of people grumpy around here at the moment. In London, Sadiq Khan gets an awful lot of criticism for many of the things that he does, and a lot of it he brings on himself. You know, I don't know Sadiq Khan personally. I've invited him on this show several times. He's always refusing to do it. He likes to go on another station where they give him a bit of a softer ride, I suspect. But he's very, very good at banning things. He loves banning everything that he doesn't like. For example, he's already banned certain adverts from appearing on the London Transport Network. He's now apparently decided it's a good idea to ban junk food adverts because children are so busy looking at them when they run on the tubes and on the buses that they immediately get off those tubes and buses and start stuffing their faces. He apparently thinks that this is the greatest threat to our society that we have ever seen. I wouldn't want to draw the conclusion that knife crime might be slightly more important, but let's talk to Carol Cass, an advertising creative, who can tell us whether advertising really works in the way that Sadiq Khan thinks it does. Carol, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Now, I don't want to make it too political, this, Carol, but it's a bit of an easy target, isn't it? I mean, are you really going to be telling me that people who watch an advert for McDonald's immediately want to go out and eat a burger?
We're not even talking about people who watch ads. We're talking about people standing at bus stops and sitting on tubes, and kids, mainly. I don't know about you. I travel on the bus a lot, and I don't think I've ever seen a child looking at a bus stop poster in my entire life.
No. Well, they're usually too busy eating. I mean, to be honest, I get on a bus stop in East London, and if I'm there at the right time when school's kicking out, all the kids are standing there with big bags of chips. So they haven't got time to look at the adverts. They're too busy eating.
Exactly. You know. All they want to do is get out of school and get to the nearest chip shop.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, it's actually, if you read between the lines, it's actually really, really tame. He's not really going to ban all fast food, all junk food. What he's banning is some junk food and fast food, and it's not very clear. In fact, it's very confusing about what those parameters are.
Well, exactly.
For instance, you can advertise hamburgers, but not cheeseburgers. Now, who's going to stand there and isolate the cheese on a poster? I don't think I could be bothered. And then some chocolate bars and not others. And also, you can advertise nuts, but not salted nuts. So, you know, you've really got to stand there and study what you're looking at.
I mean, this is why I think you have to, I mean, you have to learn lessons from America, and I've just been there, and I'm going to bore people to death this week with all various stories I'm going to tell from being there. But, you know, I was having conversations with people about various sort of political scenarios that we have in this country. And, you know, the fact is we pay these people, right, Sadiq Khan included, to do a job for us, right? He works for the public sector, i.e. the taxpayer, and yet we accept being told what to do by him. Now, in America, they sit around in absolute disbelief, and they go, what, you actually listen to what they have to say about your life, because they would pay any attention to that than, you know, look down the barrel of a gun.
Well, it's also a lot of other things. If you again read this report, it says it was an online survey of 1,500 people.
Right.
It doesn't say who the people were, where they were, whether they actually can read and write, or whether they've got parents that influence their life, nothing. So what were the questions? And who does online surveys in the first place?
Right.
Kids? I don't think so. Not unless they're going to get something out of it in the end.
Well, exactly. I mean, I talk to pollsters, many of whom I have great deal of regard for, but most of their conclusions I have no regard for. But even they say anything less than 2,000 people is not worth the paper it's written on.
No, and this wasn't written on paper. This was an online survey. They weren't even in the same room. I mean, I've done enough groups and, you know, looking into all kinds of advertising, all kinds of research, a lot of it for the government over the years. And unless you do it really, really well and spend an awful lot of money on it, unfortunately, you don't get any kind of idea of what people are doing. People are not influenced by advertising when it comes to coming out of school starving.
Yeah. Well, the point is, surely, if you really want to take life that seriously and you want to stop children from eating fast food, then ban the fast food. It's what I used to say to the government about smoking. You know, keep putting the taxes up. Ban cigarettes if you want to get rid of it. Don't just tell us, you know, we're going to tax you more and you're going to pay more. Just don't sell them.
And also, if you do stand at the bus stop, as you do in East London every morning, and probably just turn slightly to the left, there'll be a sort of newsagent fast food mobile phone shop. And right in the window will be all the fizzy sweet drinks.
Sure.
So that's what you will see. You will not see an ad in the bus stop. I wish people did see as impossible.
I mean, what's the advertising community saying about this, Carol? Because I would have thought in the old good old days that there'd be some smart lawyer getting on the phone to City Hall and saying, excuse me, guys, you have no mandate for this. You have absolutely no legal authority to stop us from advertising our wares.
I think that might be a bit of a way down the line, but I think rather than that, they're all sitting there, or they were sitting there from whenever this came into the public domain, which is about, well, towards the end of last year, wasn't it, as a debate.
That's right.
I think people have been sitting around ever since, working out ways of doing, you know, clever advertising that gets round the very fact that this isn't a very clear bit of legislation.
I mean, it also says in the report that I'm reading this morning, in addition to the buses, the tubes and the trains, junk food adverts will also be banned on roads controlled by TfL, including adverts on roundabouts and at bus stops, taxis, private hire vehicles, dial-a-ride, river services and the Emirates Airline cable car. I mean, if you can afford to go on the Emirates Airline cable car, which literally goes nowhere, you know, then good luck to you.
Yeah, you're not going to want a cheeseburger.
No. You're really not. I mean, you could get about 8 cheeseburgers for the cost of going across to the XL Centre and back.
But it sort of shows, it indicates how out of touch this whole thing is.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm pleased to see Jamie Oliver's got behind it, because this is his mandate, isn't it? You know, let kids eat properly and all that. So it's a political...
Well, this is the very same Jamie Oliver who's got into bed with some petrol station company to sell sandwiches.
Yes.
I mean, are they going to be banned? Are they going to be measured for how much salt content they've got or how much fat they've got in them?
No, no. And I don't think it'll make the slightest bit of difference to what's on offer. It will just slightly skew how this is represented on ads and buses and tubes. And I don't think many kids go on the tube, to be quite honest. I don't see many.
A lot of them on buses. But I mean, bottom line, right, Carol, how are we going to measure whether this has been a success or not, by the way?
Well, you can't, because if you read again very carefully, a lot of the bodies that have come into this discussion, even cancer research, who are saying, you know, when these kids who are now under 16, perhaps, get older, get to about 70, they might get cancer. So we're not going to see the results for quite a long time. I'm maybe speaking a bit out of order there, but, it, you know, everybody's got a bit of an awe. And it is a problem, but this isn't the way to solve it. It's a huge problem. I think it's to do with education, mainly.
Well, do you know what? Call me old-fashioned, Carol. I say it down to the parents. I mean, if you're not telling your kids you do not go and eat that rubbish after school, you know, well, what are you doing?
Not exactly. Well, you're certainly not giving them any kind of information as to how to walk down the street without tripping people up on your scooter.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I mean, I've got a tweet here from somebody, which is interesting, where it says, Graham from Bushy, TfL are happy to ban fast food adverts as the food is bad for us. Yeah, they're happy to rent units in their stations and take the rental income from fast food stores such as Greggs in Westminster, which is absolutely right. Because whenever we go and do a show down at Westminster, I always stop at Greggs and get a sausage roll for the morning. But only one,
it's
mind you.
True. You can't walk through anywhere now without finding food.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, if they're actually renting out their spaces to people like Greggs, and I've got nothing against Greggs, but it is a fast food company, you know, there's a hypocritical scene, isn't it?
Yes. Well, they haven't been very clear about which fast food they're hitting. Presumably, they're hitting the major companies who advertise, and I would think that's Hamburger Jones. But also, it mentions Uber Eats and Just Eat and Deliveroo. As compounding this felony, which is even more ludicrous. So they've got to start not advertising that they can, you know, bring you a hamburger if you're really hungry in the middle of the night. Well, that's not kids.
Well, it's certainly not cheap, and there's nothing wrong with it, as long as you do it in moderation, of course. Carol, thank you very much indeed. Carol Cass there, agreeing with me that this whole idea by Sadiq Khan to somehow demonise fast food restaurants is a complete nonsense. They would not put up with it in any other country apart from this one. Why on earth do we put up with it? I really do wonder that sometimes.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
We've got a new name, actually, now. It's the TIG Group, which technically is the Independent Group. That's how stupid it is, right? Absolutely ridiculous. Let's talk something more commonsensical, and that is pets. Everybody's got a pet out there. It's a great British tradition, whether you've got a goldfish, a hamster, a cat, a dog, a tortoise, a snake maybe, an eel. Let's talk to Rosie Barclay, who's clinical companion animal behaviourist. Rosie, very good afternoon to you.
Hello.
Now, I suppose it should come as no surprise to us that our dogs kind of ape our behaviour, if you'll pardon the expression. But cats, I've always thought, were much more independently minded than that.
Oh, well, cats are just as clever as dogs, and they can pick up on our moods just as easily.
Mm. I was under the impression cats were much cleverer than dogs. I've got a dog, I've got a Labrador, right, who's not very bright, I have to say. He's many things. He's wonderful, beautiful. We picked him up yesterday. We sent him off for a week to spend with his mum and the breeder that we got him from. And he was very, very pleased to see us. He was jumping up and down. You always worry that he's going to do himself an injury, get so excited. But cats, I mean, I've had cats, and the cats can just kind of look up at you with one eye when you come back in, because you don't even have to take them anywhere. They can stay at home and look after themselves. They never seem to care whether you're there or not.
Well, cats, of course, are more independent animals, yeah. Whereas dogs live in groups, and we are a massive part of their group. So, of course, they're really pleased to see us when we get back.
Right. I mean, this new survey that's been done, or new sort of research done by animal behaviour experts at mm-hmm. Lincoln University, I don't know if you've had a chance to see the rawness yeah. of it, or just whether you've seen the news reports, but they say things like, if you're a bit neurotic, you're less likely to let your cat outside, and so the cat might have a bigger chance of being overweight or anxious or fearful, may show behavioural problems. I mean, how sort of true is that?
Yes, no, absolutely. Cats like to go out. they need to be busy, especially in the mornings and evenings. So if you're a bit worried about your cat and a little bit neurotic, and you keep them in and you keep giving them food rather than other things to do,
yeah.
then yes, you know, they are likely to get a little bit more obese. But I mean, there's lots of things you can do if you're a little bit worried. So there's lots of things you can do with food. You don't have to just give it to them in a bowl. You can hide it. You can do creative things with empty loo rolls and cardboard boxes
right.
and get them to actually find their food. I mean, we all love a bit of hide and seek.
But do you think the cat would? Because I've seen cats before that could be quite vicious if they don't like what you're doing.
Oh, we want to add a little bit of joy in their life.
I mean, I think they were just playing. But I used to have a cat when I would get up out of bed in the middle of the night. It used to attack me. It used to like go for my ankles, and it was dark, so it was quite frightening at times. You know.
Well, it's a bit game, isn't it? It's having a bit of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, cats like to have a bit of fun, so let them have a bit of fun. You know. Make sure your house is full of lovely, enriching things, like dangling things and ping pong balls and boxes with bits of, I don't know, scrunched up newspaper or something inside with things hidden in there. So they've got to find them. So keep them busy.
Mm.
Nothing worse than just sitting around doing nothing, because you get fat and you get depressed and you become a couch potato. But there is lots of things you can do. If you're a bit worried about letting your cat out, then make sure that the inside of the home that the cat is in, the environment, is really enriched with lots of lovely things for them to play with and to find and to hunt. They need to sort of hunt. And if they're not allowed out, they have to do it in the house. And if it's your feet in the middle of the night, then so be it.
Well, true. And why don't people like their cats to go outside? Because is it a fear that they won't come back? Mm. Is it a fear that they're going to be attacked by a fox? I mean, I've actually seen on the streets of London a cat chasing a fox away. Because they, you know, you don't mess with the cats in London.
I don't know, I've seen a rat chase a cat away. I think a lot of it's road traffic, you know, accidents. There's so many cats, especially when they're young. You know, they go out and they start, you know, sort of going around, and especially when they're young and they're wanting to go out and seek and find things and, you know, just have a really good time, party, then they're more likely to get, they're not learnt about the dangers of road traffic and they get run over. But yes, it's very, you know, if you've had a cat that's died on the road, it's very tragic. And
it's very traumatic, isn't it? Particularly for kids. If you've got kids and they've got a pet, it's really awful, isn't it?
It is. It's horrible. And there's so many, you know, cats are, unfortunately, you know, end up at, in the vets through very traffic accidents.
Mm.
So owners obviously and understandably want to keep them in. And that's great, but the cat possibly, normally, usually wants to go out.
Yeah, right.
Well, because
they've got this kind of instinct thing going on, haven't they, where they like catching mice, they like bringing you presents. I mean, my sister's got a cat which is sort of goes outside, and she lives in the countryside in Connecticut, and it will quite often bring a mouse, a half-eaten mouse back into the house, or a half-eaten chipmunk, you know, as a present, as a kind of a tribute.
Well, it brings it in because it's its home territory and it feels safe there, so it can eat it and get, you know, and do what it has to do with it. So you've really got to create that environment, the outside environment, inside your own home if you're not letting it out. So lots of things, places for it to climb up onto, and into, and hide and find things. So you're sort of recreating the outside, bringing cat grass, plants that are safe for your cat to be around, that sort of thing. You know, they're not going to be very happy or a bit miserable just sitting around in a sort of a very empty, barren environment. Yeah. So they are going to want to go out.
Would you sort of recommend real interaction with any pet in terms of, you know, a lot of people have a pet and they kind of just stroke them occasionally when they feel like it, or give them a treat or something like that. I mean, should you really do the whole sit them down, have a conversation with them, you know, stare into their eyes, play with them a bit?
Absolutely. We all need a bit of joy in our lives.
Yeah.
But do, you know, offer them what they like to do. As I said, you know, dogs love to go finding things. They've got these super noses. So, you know, hide their food around the house or the garden for them to find. They absolutely love going out finding it.
Yeah.
And even if it's some bit of kibble that they don't normally have and not that bothered about, or leave in their bowl, you start hiding it and they will eat it.
Right.
So, you know, there's some really good ideas.
Well, my dog is very enthusiastic about pretty much anything. I mean, you take him out exactly the same walk that you went on for the previous 15 days, and he'll be even more delighted that he's doing it for a 16th day in a row.
Ah, but it's changed. You might not see it's changed, but the smells and the scent that that dog's picking up, is all every day there'll be a different scent.
Right.
And it's like going out and reading a newspaper and just really writing your emails. Well, I mean, they smell and sniff and leave emails all over the place.
Sure.
They'd be very different for them, different environment, because they've got these superhuman noses. So make use of them. Don't just drag your dog around the block. Let it sniff.
No, well, I'm very fortunate. I live in a quite rural place, so he's off the lead pretty much all the time. You know.
And all those different animals that are going to be around and leaving their scent as well. It's a great fun playground for them.
Yeah,
and you need to go out with your dog.
Very exciting. I'll tell you an interesting thing about my dog. He doesn't like the high street. Down in Sussex, it's quite a small high street. It's quite busy. But there's one particular place that he really doesn't like, and it's the butcher's shop. Now, normally, you'd expect him to love the butcher's shop because it's full of sausages and pork chops and all that. But he goes really weird when we go near it, almost as though something bad happened there. Is that something that you could define for us?
Did something bad happen there?
Well, I don't know. There was actually, funnily enough, there's also another part of the high street where there was somebody got run over, and he doesn't like going there either, and somebody was actually killed there. But this is more a shop front sort of situation where I don't know whether anything bad happened. I'm hoping it didn't.
You should like the smell, I would have thought. But perhaps, do you sort of, when you go past, just tug him a little quicker just in case he decides to go in the
sausages? Not really. No, not really. It's almost as though, I mean, you know your dog very well. It's almost as though he's frightened of something there.
Hey, well, read him. You know, let him tell you. If he says he's frightened, then he is going to be frightened. So don't try and drag him too close. Go the other side of the road. Sort of rattle those treat pack in your pocket and jolly him along past. And then perhaps offer him a little treat or something just as you go.
We just don't have to take him up there. We used to go up to a little cafe and he'd just come in and have breakfast with us. But we just don't do it that much anymore. I've got a great tweet here from Linda, who sent a lovely picture of her cat, who's called George. And she says, George is grumpy because he's got an abscess on his shoulder after fighting with trouble next door. I'm grumpy because it's going to cost me a minimum of 80 quid at the vets today and much more if he has to be put under to sort it out.
Yep, fair enough. Yeah, of course, animals do get grumpy, just like we do, when they are feeling under the weather or in pain. So if there's any behaviour change in your cat or dog and you can't sort of put your finger on it, why that's happened, then take them along to the vet, because you never know. They're very good at hiding pain.
Yeah.
So just the fact that there's a little bit of behaviour change there might indicate that there's some bit of pain, underlying pain issues going on there. So
pop
along to your vet. And obviously, if they decide it's a behavioural issue, then they'll refer you to a qualified clinical animal behaviourist that can help
I mean, have you seen you must have done as an animal behaviourist, you must have seen kind of situations where dogs are literally, I don't know, traumatised by something that's happened to them. And a lot of people, of course, will adopt a dog, maybe a rescue dog or something like that, which can be challenging, can't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, we sort of think there's no reason why they shouldn't get post-traumatic stress disorder just like we do.
Yeah.
But in that case, you would have to go along to your vet and they will refer you to a properly qualified animal behaviourist. Unfortunately, our industry and our field is not regulated.
Right.
So anybody can advertise themselves as a pet behaviour counsellor.
Yeah.
So just make sure that your vet will know who the properly qualified.
So you should really get a recommendation from a vet then, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. All clinical animal behaviourists will only go through vet referral.
Right. Okay.
There's lots of underlying reasons why dogs and cats and other pets have, you know, behavioural changes.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because of pain. And we don't know they're in pain because they're so blooming good at hiding it.
Yeah, right. And Mary says this. She sent a great text. She says, I was laughing when you said cats don't mind if you leave them alone. I left my cat overnight with food, water and a clean litter tray. And the next morning after checking I was back, she then snubbed me for the rest of the day, ignoring any interaction. She definitely minded.
Absolutely. And so would you, I think. Yeah, cats, of course, they do like their owners being around. And some more than others. They're quite independent. They're quite individual. Most animals are individual. You know, what one sort of does, the other ones what might not. There's always those exceptions to the rule.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating.
But no, cats, I mean, they like people. Mm. They like, you can tell they do, because they come up to you with their tail up and a little bit of a quiver, and they rub themselves all around your legs to make sure that they put their scent back on you.
Right. So you listen, when they want to. They like you when they want to like you. That's
bit
the good
cupboard
thing.
Love, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, listen, Rosie, fantastic. Have you got a website or something that people can look at?
Yes.
Well, tell us what it is then.
It's Rosie Barkley.
Yeah.
.com.
Is it? Well, very straightforward.
R-O-S-I-E, Barkley, same as bank.
Okay. .com. Well done. Thank you very much indeed. Rosie Barkley, clinical companion, animal behaviourist, somebody very sound who knows an awful lot about the animal world. And here's one from Sean. He says, my dog won't walk past the vet surgery without trying to drag us in. He's a bit mental. He also hates cyclists and children, just like me and the wife. Well, that's the thing. If you don't like cyclists or children, your dog will be the same. Do you remember the guy that barked at Sunderland fans? That was brilliant.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.